The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Unlimited broadband so you can download, upload and stream as much as you like.
Now, tweet caught our eye last week. I'm going to read the full tweet, which kind of gives us the story of the man we're about to speak to. And it's a quote that says, "This time 6 years ago, I was in Cork prison with no hope, no life and just wanting it all to be over." And the rest of the tweet I'm not going to read out because that's the story. Colm Healy, good morning to you.
Morning, Ryan. How are you?
Nice of you to join us this morning. You were very young. You were, what, about 15 or 16 and you suddenly got the buzz for what?
Gambling and alcohol, any kind of addiction really, but gambling was the main one.
And how did it come into your life?
I suppose I was shown how to do the football pools by a friend and from the minute I went into the bookies, I just felt comfortable. I felt accepted. Things I didn't feel when I was outside the bookies.
You got a nice buzz from it, did you?
Yeah. I don't know, was it even the winning? Like, later on, it definitely was the winning or the losing. It was just the risk-taking of it, the acceptance of being inside the bookies, the environment of the bookies I was addicted to.
And what was happening, for example, at school and things like that, that made you want to find, as they say now, a tribe somewhere else?
I suppose it goes back to when I was younger, and I suppose maybe I looked normal from the outside, but I felt weird and different, and I suppose I describe it as I'd body image issues, I'd personal issues going on inside me, and I never felt accepted because I couldn't accept myself. And it just, the first place I got a release was when I went into the bookies. But in school, I felt stupid, to be honest with you, Ryan, to be blunt.
And you had, when you say body issues, I've seen, I know what you looked like. You looked like anyone else in the sense that there's nothing different or particularly peculiar about you.
No, and see, it has nothing to do, I'd imagine the most handsome men or whatever have body image issues, but it just was, what effect it had on me. Like, I didn't have confidence to talk to people the way I wanted to talk to people, to do what young people do and talk to girls and stuff like that. Like, I just didn't have confidence.
Just uncomfortable in your skin, possibly. And as you say, confidence. Were you introverted, or did you have a personality that just found its home in the bookies?
I suppose, like I describe it, maybe I was touched like Walter Mitty. Like, I had different characters for different situations. I might have people from the outside, as I said, might have perceived I was doing okay and stuff, but it was kind of an act, really. And like, I was in, I describe it as pain. I was in severe pain and torment, and I was in crisis mode from a very young age, really.
But you were able to kind of tweak your act depending on the audience.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I was very good at avoiding situations I didn't want to be in. Like, I was quite good at football, but I sabotaged that, like, and because the audience was too much for me, like, and the expectations and stuff like that. Like, and I kind of did that all. Like, I sabotaged my leaving cert. I sabotaged everything in my life, really, jobs, just relationships. I sabotaged my relationship with my own family. I suppose I planned to fail before I had to feel the failure, if that makes sense.
And was the failure part of a kick as well, or?
I suppose it's like, in hindsight, it was self-harm. It's similar to someone cutting themselves. If you create pain, it distracts from the real pain that's going on.
Okay, and you started getting kind of into petty crime, and you accessed homeless services, and you found yourself, well, you were stealing things. I mean, was that a cry for help, or did you actually want to steal?
A bit of both. Like, stealing originally was bits of money here, there, though, like, small. It would have been coinage at the time and stuff like that, but that's how it would have started. And it was just to get the buzz of the bookies, then it kind of escalated into shoplifting and stuff like that. And I suppose I admit today that I was addicted to that as well, because that was another distraction. Mm-hmm. Towards the end, it was definitely a cry for help towards the end.
And you would have been arrested a few times and kind of let go because the crime was probably petty enough. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, and like, I suppose it's nearly an inequality in society. I was a perceived as a country kind of boy, and I kind of had an air of innocence about me. And I suppose judges gave me more chances than they would most. And it took 15 plus years for me to get to where it was always going to end up in prison.
I like your expression there. I had the air of innocence about me. That suggests that you were no more innocent than the man on the moon.
Oh, no.
but they bought into the air.
Exactly. Like, I suppose I was always remorseful. I always knew what I was doing was wrong.
Sure.
And when I was caught, I used to hold my hands up straight away. I used to never deny it. But it just got too much in the end. Like, I was losing. As I said, I lost my relationship with my family. My mother was there for me through thick and thin, to her detriment, really. But
she was the last person standing in your life, wasn't she? She stood by you regardless as everyone else fell away.
Yeah. And as I say, to her detriment at the time. But like, I was my mother's boy. I was a mommy's boy, I suppose. Yeah. And ironically, I could do no wrong in her eyes. I still can't.
Even still. But yeah. Yeah, did you spend a lot of your time waiting for the guards to call to your house?
Oh, yeah. any lights that passed the front window, I thought that was it. Like, you know, I was preempting it, sitting in my room. I'd often have drink in the room and stuff like that. And I always thought that was the moment, you know. Like, and it did come several times, but the final time, I'll never forget being driven away, knowing that it was prison I was going, and my mother standing at the gate. And, you know, like, it wasn't reality, but I have the image in my head of a small boy looking out the back window. You know, so,
and what did the small boy see?
Oh, like, I saw pain, I saw hurt, I saw despair. And, like, it's hard to forgive yourself for the pain I caused my mother, and specifically, but all my family, really.
Your mother was unwell soon after that, was she?
Yeah, she got sick when I was in prison. There was many a long night that I didn't know whether she was alive or not, because I couldn't make contact with her, and I had no contact with the outside world, really. And she got sick while I was in prison, and she ended up in a nursing home. And the last time I saw her out the squad car was the last time I saw her standing outside or my home place, really.
How long were you sent to prison for?
I got a 12-month sentence. Like, I got several 12-month sentences, but they were concurrent, so I was serving 12 months.
And how old were you when you went through the doors that first day?
33.
And what was the most striking thing about being in prison for the first time?
I suppose I was going there, but I suppose there was an empty feeling. When you be the first night, you'd be in a cell on your own down the remand, and it was horrific, like the sounds, the noises, people looking through the peephole.
What noises do you hear?
I suppose it's the one thing the movies get right. It's the clink, the clank, the keys. The keys coming to the door if they were putting something in. Or it's just... And I suppose it's also the silence. Like, the silence makes the other noises stand out more. And, like, you asked me what stood out most, it was it was the bucket in the corner at the time. There was Slap Out and Cock Prison at the time, like, and I can remember looking at it, is that what that was for? And afraid to actually use it in case it wasn't. And it was like the first night was really hard in prison.
You said prison saved my life.
Yeah, I really, really believe that. It gave me a chance to stop, reset. Like, I never thought I was going to, as I said, it was always in my future, but I always thought it was going to be over first. Like, I always thought I was going to self-harm or take my own life before I got to prison. So the fact I got there was my first lucky thing to happen to me. I suppose the first 3 or 4 weeks, if I thought I'd be saying that it saved my life, I wouldn't believe you, because it was horrific. Like, I didn't have the courage to ask for anything. It was 3 weeks before I asked where the shower was, to go for a shower and what things like that. But I slowly got into a routine there. I got everywhere, there's a prison within, there's a structure within the prison, same as there is in the outside world. I was lucky to get the best job inside there in the officer's mess. And that gave me a routine every day. It took me out of the cell every day. It gave me contacts with the people that were able to help me.
You were trusted.
Yeah. And I suppose I didn't trust myself. And to get that position of trust, even if it was within a system of punishment, to get that trust gave me the first feeling of trust for a very long time, and that really helped and gave me the first step to making advancements in my life.
And 6 years later, hence your tweet that caught our eye, you did what last Thursday at the age of 39?
I got a social care degree. I went back to education soon after coming out of prison. As I said previously, I sabotaged my leaving cert the first time around. I thought I was thick as two planks would be the words going around in my head. And I went back and did the adult leaving cert when I came out of prison first. And even in that, I was still isolating when I was doing that and things. So I had decisions to make, and I always wanted to go into the humanities side, but I didn't know what was I going for the right reasons. So I did a PLC course, which I'd recommend to anyone in Clos Josepha and AFA. And I started telling people who I was, where I was, that I was in prison. And more importantly, I was who I wanted to be, who I really was. I was the real Cullum for probably the first time in my life.
And you work in what sector now?
I'm in the homeless sector.
Good on you.
Yeah.
It's a good story, because it shows the circle, you know, the cycle of life. You could have ended up down a very different road.
Yeah, and like there's so many people that helped me along the way, like the Cork Alliance Centre and Vicky, my key worker inside there, like they gave me the chance to speak and be who I wanted to be and trust who I wanted to be, like in terms of housing, then Sophia Housing and Focus Ireland. Like, they gave me fierce opportunities, like, and the colleges gave me fierce trust down along the way. Like, there's for CIT, there's 3 placements I have to do for do the social care degree, and like with Garda vetting, it can be hard to get jobs and stuff in the sector because of Garda vetting. But like, there's been placement, have accepted me, I've got a job today, like, so it's fading into the past, my Garda vetting, like, but it does stop people, like,
and changes things for the better. I'm delighted for you, Cullum. I wish you well in your future.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for joining us to tell your story so honestly today. And my best to you and your family and your mother in particular. And we'll talk again sometime in real life.
Thanks very much, Ryan.
All the best. Thank you, Cullum Healy, joining us from Cork this morning.